Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon, Monday afternoon, and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Now, you know, one thing I know is that when my voice sounds that deep, the mic sound is through the roof.
Helmut, Monday afternoon is what you...
Yeah.
Are you starting that early on a Monday?
Is it a Monday?
Yeah, Monday afternoon. A good Monday afternoon. That's actually a good one.
Yeah.
Well, not like how I was greeted yesterday.
How were you greeted?
Good morning, sir, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
And then I had to tell the lady, my dear, it's not morning. I know, but she was like, good afternoon, sorry, good morning, sir. And I'm like, yeah, you are there. That one over there.
So, Home Run, your drive time show, always comes with an exciting topic to keep you entertained wherever you're tuned in from, whether you're at home or just listening under the desk, hiding from the manager, because we like Home Run so much. Don't worry, we got you.
We imagine people listening to us under the desk?
We are that good, man.
Eish.
Yeah. So, but if you're driving, just eyes on the road and focus and just stay tuned and, well, we'll do the talking.
There's no desk in your car, please. Just remember that, guys. Yeah. Otherwise, things are looking dodgy.
Oh, yeah. You know, things are very...
Plus, dodgy. Being under the desk at the office also looks dodgy. Well, interesting story regarding under the desk references. Not that this includes any, you know, envelopes or any other particular situations. What was the guy's name? Not the name. That's not important. One guy highlighted in terms of like, because of working in Asia primarily, where sometimes they get like an extended lunch break, in certain scenarios.
Really?
Depending on the sector that you work in, depending obviously on the particular, contact that you've got. But if you are a fully employed person, Yeah. The other things, you know, outside of the scope of employment, like, for example, medical aids and stuff, those are still blurry features and functions that I'm still trying to understand. Do they exist? Do they not exist?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have, you know, direct access to a doctor or medical, you know, treatment, for example, like in countries like Namibia, where we've actually got a hybrid situation, or is it situations like in France where you actually just get directly billed or directly taxed on your employee number from your employment office, and it gets, and you actively pay directly from your salary into some sort of a national health fund specifically that subsidizes healthcare for everybody, meaning you can access a doctor and be given, you know, assistance within 10 minutes of showing up at a practice. Now, besides that part, the interesting thing, still staying on the under the desk references, is that they allow, for example, like in China, I don't know about Japan, but they allow employees actually to take a midday nap. Now, if you don't know what a midday nap is, if you've ever heard of the weird nationwide situation of what happens in Spain, known as a siesta.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought this was a joke that people had against the Spanish. I did not know it was an actual fact.
What the Spanish do.
Dear listeners, if you did not know, the whole of Spain just goes on lockdown at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then they go take it happens at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And then they go take a nap. Or everyone just chills after having lunch. Everyone just goes and chills. Even the shops close apparently, because the shop attendants, the waiters, everyone goes and has a siesta, which is like a whole cultural thing that started becoming. At first, it became like an industrial mechanism under the medieval period, because the temperatures were so high, it was so hot in Spain back then, you know, when things were still medieval situations. And then it just became a cultural norm. At 2 o'clock, 2:30, if the sun is baking, everybody go and sleep and rest. Go and rest. So apparently the British have an issue with that. The rest of Europe has an issue with it. I find it unique and intriguing. I say unique and intriguing. Guess why? Namibia has the same temperature and has the same climatic conditions like Spain. So maybe, you know, Minister Wise Emmanuel, you know, if you could probably look at, instead of looking at a 4-day work week situation, could you kindly look at a siesta situation? Please, you know, just there, a national 2:30 until 4:30, you know, obviously when the home run shows up. You know, we have the opportunity of then waking people up afterwards, you know. Just look at that. Every day it's a national situation.
Look, man, there's a joke my science teacher liked to correct in high school that the problem with Africans is that whatever you introduce to them, they become a little too good at it. So...
we are good at drinking beer, we are good at driving, we are good at eating.
The example he more often used whenever he used that analogy was that, you know, a black person was just given a ball and was like, you know what, this is what you do. You just kick it and then it gets in, you know, it gets in that space and then it counts as a score.
And then we forgot to defend as well. Remember that.
Yeah. When they came back, they found homeboy. He started dribbling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of passing.
Exactly. So we are very creative when it comes to this.
So we forgot to defend, we forgot to pass, but we know how to score and how to dribble.
That was last year, right? When the Minister of Education was in the south, talking about teachers. You know, some teachers taking.
No, it was the statement we did.
Some teachers taking leave. Like an extended leave or without asking permission or something like that.
Yeah, she was there. Yeah. You're right, she was there.
Now, well, introduce sleeping and believe me, what they're going to have is... power naps really help. Now, power naps really help. You know, when you just feel like you are beat.
True.
Just take 15 to 20 minutes, just close your eyes and shut down. When you wake up, you wake up like full of energy.
True. No, Elmut, why I also started with the under the desk reference situation, before we actually get into our conversation, guys. Which is shipping and transporting. A complete different spectrum of our conversation. Why I started with also, for example, like the Asian countries, is primarily that they are also heavy specifically on that, recognizing that your workforce needs to be healthy and they need to be... They shouldn't be exhausted, but they should at least have slept, you know, or rested well for a scenario. They emphasize heavily meal times, meaning you should have at least have had something in your belly, breakfast. You should have your lunch. You should go and have your dinner. Now, when it comes to the Korean and Japanese cultures, situations get a little bit out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen enough evidence from a Chinese commercial aspect in terms of seeing... You know, how do Chinese office workers and Chinese companies, how do they operate in terms of, you know, just the whole sort of like industrial relations behavior of employees and employers. However, they and the other guys, for example, here into Vietnam, the South China Sea guys, they emphasize 3 o'clock or during your lunch. Sorry, Spain is 3 o'clock during your lunch. And they have two hour lunches. In Asia, they have 2 hour lunches, Helmut.
2 hours?
2 hours. So not from 1 o'clock to this, literally from 12 to 2. 2 hour lunches, but it's everyone takes lunch at the same time. Not you take lunch and when you and I negotiate who then takes lunch when. Not that simple thing that happens here in Namibia.
Yeah.
No. Everyone has a designated lunchtime so as to, you know, when productivity ends, you know, when productivity starts, and then it just commences from there.
Okay. Now, is this by legislation or it's mostly influenced by, you know, by culture? So if you look at it from the perspective of Spain, for example,
I would assume, for example, in the Asian scenario, you would get nuances, meaning differences between country to country.
Yeah.
being that legislation-wise, they do have it. Like I heard from the Japanese do have direct labor laws, but labor culture or the culture of work environment is the abusive one. I.e., your job starts at 8 o'clock. The Japanese want you to be there at 7. Your boss wants you there at 7. Your job ends at 5. Your boss, and in office culture, company culture in Japan, you leave the office when your boss leaves. So if your boss has work past 5 o'clock, you are all sitting with your boss until he or she is done with their work.
Okay, but that guy is paid much, much, much better than me. Why am I waiting for him?
Because if you leave literally at 5 and you come literally to the office at 8 a.m., you are considered, culturally, you're a bad worker, you're not a team player. All that negativity of that public relations, literally the office public relations works against you.
It's a smear campaign.
Literally, it's an ugly smear campaign. And it's where many of the particular Westerners who tried working in Japan didn't understand what was going on. Because they understood, like you and I would understand, black and white, it stands on black and white. I can start at 8 and I go home at 5. And my lunch is between 1 and 2. Beyond that is my time.
Yeah.
That's my time. Anything beyond that is my time. Work has its time. Yeah. I have my time.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Americans don't know of the concept of work-life balance. It's a European concept. Because the Americans also do the same thing like in Asia. The Americans, you can... dude, if you've ever had a conversation with an American, they just talk their work. Who are you? What do you do? Where do you work? What money do you make?
So your whole life becomes your...
That's the thing about the Americans.
Okay, but there is this thing called retirement.
Helmut, the current situation now, if you look at industrial relations in the U.S. context and the EU context.
Yeah.
When the Americans in their YouTube and TikTok videos, when they go to Europe and they try that stuff with the Europeans, the Europeans ask them, don't you have a life? That's all the Europeans ask them. Don't you have a life past your work?
Yeah.
Don't you have a you? Yeah. To look after. Why are you talking to me about your work? I didn't ask you about your work.
Yeah.
I don't care about your work or what work you do.
I want to know you.
Not just that they... Well, in many cases, the Europeans apparently tell them, I don't care who you are.
European Czech.
And we are slightly also sort of like inheriting a European context here in Africa, because as Africans, we are happy to see culture. Do you know that? When we go to another African country, we're happy to go and see indigenous dancing and cultural activities.
Yeah.
Ah, and then the person comes, I'm a banker. Ah, whatever.
Yeah.
We're just like, yeah, whatever, bruh.
Yeah, I know.
I'm a miner. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
You're fine. Now what?
So what, bruh? I'm a doctor. Oh, okay.
Okay.
So is there a difference between diseases in Ghana and Namibia? I don't know what diseases. Okay, then there's no use. But anyway, yeah.
You're reminding me of my Saturday show examples I don't want to bring here.
Well.
Yeah, so.
Getting on earnest into our show for today, guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Shipping.
Ship.
The shipping industry is massive. And it's the most effective right now and cheaper way of transporting large amounts of cargo.
Mm.
Now, did you know that... fuel used in ships, when it's stored, it's stored in somewhat semi-solid form that it has to be melted. They usually move it from its storage, for the most part, with shovels
today,
to melt it, and then I'm like, so this is what I think they call it heavy fuel.
Yeah,
yeah.
Did you know? And this is also what Dwight discovered today. And I'm sorry for anyone from the shipping industry listening now today who probably might be laughing at Dwight for unveiling and describing what a bunker ship is. Now, I could never understand. Why does this bunker shipping and this bunker ship situation... What is a bunker ship? Do you know why there was a guy from the International Bunker Ship Association, part of the conversation? I don't know if you remember the guy in the video that I sent you about the event. He asked the question about the alternative fuels regulation.
Fuels that they were discussing.
Yeah, the regulations. And that the regulations is something that needs to be considered specifically in this future of fuels discussion that the International International Maritime Association Organization is busy developing. And then I go look up, what is a bunker ship? A bunker ship, Helmut, is a floating fuel station for ships. So it's another ship whose main job is supplying fuel to other ships on the high seas.
So somewhat like the same way that a lot of military planes fuel mid-air.
That too, or that specific strategic planes, for example, that do long distances, yeah. fuel mid-air with that specific plane.
Yeah.
Usually most of the times it's a military plane.
Yeah.
But this is now in international shipping, and specifically in cargo and other particular heavy shipping scenarios. This bunker ship just sails there, wherever it is sailing, there on the high seas, and it just refuels other ships. Which, as I'm sitting now here, realizing that this is the quickest way to avoid specifically problematic countries. If you've got a shipping company from your country, Helmut, and Namibia is in the bad books with another country, and you don't want any ship, specifically cargo ship or transporting ship that is Namibian registered with flying Namibian colors, to come into some sort of a situation or probably be sanctioned or probably be confiscated, that these ships, instead of going into a dock or harbor to refuel, they refuel on the high seas at these bunker ships. Which is a wonderful, actually. I was like, this is a wonderful thing, just for specifically to show up here. And also, let me help in terms of also identifying this. So how we came upon today's discussion as well was because of an international dispute that broke out last year, Helmut. Remember when I told you that the Americans and the Saudis were trying to boycott the International Maritime Organization because it was the first UN organization that would have signed a specific a fuel transition strategy
for the shipping industry.
For the shipping industry. And it would have also have put on specific targets for the world's, once again, the world's biggest contributors to greenhouse gas emissions through the fuels that are used, which is the conversation where you and I start off actually today, based upon that overall talk. That whole conversation was thrown into the boat because of Saudi Arabia and the United States, and there was a third country I forgot. Primarily the US went and wrote a massive press release on the press secretary of the United States' website, sort of like saying, yeah, this is once again what the UN is doing. It's imposing rules on other countries for this and this and that reason. But when you had to look at today's conversation, shipping contributes 3% currently of global greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah.
So why were the Americans unhappy for? I mean, when that lady from Maersk gave the first presentation.
Roberta
Seni.
Cheney or Seni.
Yeah. Yeah. When she gave that presentation, she had that big bold text standing there. Shipping, international surf shipping contributes. Or let me rather say, what's the term she used? Maritime transport uses or contributes 3% of global greenhouse gas emissions. So, it is probably negligible, but it's rather also better be safe than sorry perspective that these guys started from. Because this conversation was not about generating any laws, as they said at the start, because they were pretty clear. We're not generating any laws. We're not developing any policies here.
This discussion is not going to end with a declaration.
Please, no fists must be thrown. No insults must be hurled. This is just for us to get. But it's a nice thing that they said. Let's understand what are the experiences out there that you guys, the people sitting there in person and the people that were also there online, what experiences have you seen? And let's extrapolate those experiences to understand what's actually going on there regarding the alternative fuel uses, which is a lovely concept, which also features Weirdly enough, Helmut, I also have to disclose this to you right now, but I was about to disclose it a little bit later. So Namport earlier today held a sort of like a signing, ceremony with the government representatives of Korea regarding a green port strategy that Namport would try and implement. Now, we will talk about that. However, I then go scroll around there on that website of the International Maritime Organization, and the whole green strategy is developed and to be implemented in conjunction with the government of South Korea. You see the South Korea's logo there, just nice there. So, once again, everybody has got a plan for Africa. Except Africa has any plans for the world. Yeah.
Now, even though shipping, like global shipping, now, this is, I think, for the most part, used in reference to, large ships, like, your oil tankers and cargo ships. Mm. Even though you can throw in, shipping boats in there. But this discussion was mostly had, it mostly talks about the use of biofuel in the shipping industry in reference to primarily the cargo ships, because those things are massive and they are spending months at times moving from destination point A to point B.
Mm.
And they are burning fuel all throughout. Now, with oil tankers, it even comes with disaster times too, because they are more often oil tankers involved sometimes in the middle of nowhere, in a storm, and if there's a leakage or if there's if it crashes or something happens to that, that oil is going to be everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a pollution in terms of air pollution and also pollution that of, maritime, pollution basically of the sea. So now when you look at it from that angle, you look at this discussion, and this is from the International Maritime Organization, a sub-organization under the UN organization, UN organization ECOSOC. Now, what they are looking for is, we have to transition from using fossil fuel as the primary source of in the fueling of shipping of cargo ships to biofuels.
Yeah.
Now, which is it's one that is very debatable transition if you look at it, because even the lady Roberta, who has a very nice title to her name, going straight to the, I think she also works for the Swedish shipping giant, is it Maersk?
But it seems like, when I looked at the name, yeah. Maersk is itself, yeah. But then the name Maersk McKinney Møller,
yeah,
or Møller, I was like, oh, and then it says it's obviously some sort of a research institute.
Yeah, it's a research institute.
And I was like, oh, okay, so the private sector goes and develops its own research sector, institutes. Would you guys look at that? They've got money. We are no... Oh, let me also explain to you another interesting thing, Helmut.
Okay,
Back in last year, when we were trying to have a comprehensive talk about rail transport in Namibia, then I came across on the internet, okay, it's not weird, but it was one of those organizations that have the name International in it. And when you go through the website of them, it doesn't look so international, because it asks you to pay here. And if you want to download a document here, you must pay there. And it was also trying to launch some sort of a study of international rail or something.
Yeah.
They bring out like an updated book every year about international rail and international transport needs. And then I try to download even the previous version, which was the 2024 version of that book. Everywhere I was just meeting a paygate. And then I realized, but why are you using the name international
If everything is behind a paywall.
If everything is behind a paywall, you're treating it literally like a, you know, a private commodity.
This point is a commercial exercise.
Exactly. This really looks like a private commercial enterprise.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it literally was. Now, if you were trying to find anything regarding international railway and trends and developments that were taking place, because I was trying to look also into why is it that the rest of the world has a combination of passenger transport, cargo transport, and other particular functions that rail transport can play. And you come to an African perspective, you don't find anything. Okay, you also have to go in pickpocket, meaning you have to assume, okay, South Africa. I assume Nigeria. I assume Egypt. I assume Ethiopia. So there where there are like large population densities, South Africa at 60 million. Ethiopia, I think, at 100 million.
Yeah.
Nigeria has 200 million.
Yeah.
Egypt at, I think, 80 million. I assume there is functioning public transport, public railway passenger transport. It was a massive headache. Still till the day. I'll probably have to see something might have popped up somewhere, but it was a massive headache. However, in this presentation of the IMO guys, there were literally like four people. Even the International Energy Agency guys stepped forward, the Frankel guy, the Paulo Frankel, who said, "I'm not here to give you don't concentrate on the small numbers."
And there were a lot of disclaimers.
He kept blocking the people. He kept saying, "Don't look at the small numbers, or don't worry about how small the numbers are. Just be concerned that if the line goes up straight, but I need to know the small number with the line. What does that mean?" So yeah, so. It was literally like each one could bring their resources. And you know what's a nice thing?
Yeah.
At each of those particular talking points, you can literally go and look up the resources that they reference in their presentations. Oh, the presentation's also there. I shared with them. Nice thing, nice start. Now, here's where things get tricky. Obviously, they simplified it for our discussion for today in terms of the future of fuels. And when they broke it down, the biggest concern from I ended at Frankel's presentation. The biggest concern they had was literally biofuels, which is ethanol, methanol production. And then in that presentation from Frankel mentioned something of land use change. Now, there's only one other particular sort of like resource that I know where I heard that term, land use. It was when I had buddies who were studying also at Polytechnic before it became NUST in the land management department. So the people that you know as town planners or as town planners and what do the municipalities have? The municipalities call them land management department, yeah. So it's also where you find the quantity surveyors. So the people that I, the school friends, the university friends that I had, they, three of them or four of them studied the, land use planning diploma, or they were in the land use planning diploma course. The other two guys were in the, quantity surveying side of things. Interesting subject matter. Anyone that's interested about geography, specifically about the layout of how towns are laid out and their planning and sort of like the thinking that goes in there, besides obviously having to deal with the councillors that are part of the town council or the city council or whatever, obviously, because you'll have to go and educate those guys in terms of why you are drawing a line here, which symbolizes the street and not the line is going there because there's a mountain there and the mountain is not here. Sure. You know, besides that, the geography side of those things are interesting. I won't tell you that they are big payers. I know the quantity surveyors, supposedly if you work for the mines, they pay a lot. But yeah. Now, at the heart of that, Helmut, when I heard land use change, then I understood what is also the problem specifically with the biofuel production that Frankel spoke about. So the biofuel production means you've got to grow the thing. And he used two terms, direct land use change and indirect. ILUC and DLUC. You guys can also look it up there specifically just for your interest, like, in terms of seeing how biofuels are going to be problematic, because primarily they take something away from the food security component.
The food security is in...
You need to grow, you need to allocate land meant under the agricultural span of things for food production.
Yeah.
Now, countries like Brazil, countries like the United States, like Mexico, even Australia, even South Africa, they have certain agricultural functions meant for biofuel production. So this means they would grow a specific kind of a mealie. I'm using the colloquial term for all of us to understand. Instead of me using corn or maize, I'm using the word mealie, so we understand it's a mealie. So they would grow a specific kind of a mealie, Helmut. I don't know if it's the one that the Americans use a lot for cornstarch production, because they use corn syrup in most of American foods, from tomato sauce to the cool drinks to the bread production to everything. The Americans throw cornstarch everywhere, and that's why everyone doesn't want to import or actually buy American food, you know, in sort of like bulk as an export situation to the rest of the world. No one wants that. However, Brazil is a huge biofuel producer. Australia, I suspect, is also biofuel producer. I know South Africa was, because South Africa...
Past tense.
Because I don't know if they updated the information. They probably might have dropped the initiative, but I know that South Africa was a biofuel producer, because they've got the company, what's the company's name? Sasol, which is a synthetic fuel producer for South Africa. Now, why would South Africa have a synthetic fuel producer? Well, you know, there was a small little issue known as Namibia, and another other small issue that, you know, they also conducted, known as apartheid, you know, all those other little small issues that the South Africans had to think on their feet, literally, and they did. They came up with one of, still till today, no other African country can do this. They have a synthetic fuel producer. Sasol, and it's literally a major company. Now, on that other list there of Frankl, I saw ammonia, Helmut. I saw hydrogen. I saw, what was the other thing's name? Liquefied natural gas, which is the thing I think you spoke of. The chunks, the physical chunks
that shoveled and then melted during the refueling process of a ship.
Yeah.
Of a large ship.
Which probably speaks towards what the bunkering ships have to do, or the bunker ships have to do. They have to probably keep it in a cold storage situation.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if you're a bunker ship, I mean, if you're just going to hang there while the sun is baking down on your whole ship, sure, you don't want to be a floating bomb, you know, or what do they call that thing? That fire starter that you use for making fires at a braai. Yeah, you don't want to be a fire starter. So yeah, that's probably one of the reasons why they had to like freeze it. Now, the alternatives each speak towards great potential. However, we still have to see these things come through. And once again, guys,
the practical reality of things.
Yeah, the practical reality of things. It's just how it would take shape, even though the event that I just, you know, mentioned today has specific prominence, but in a different scenario, because it's port facility versus shipping. Shipping comes in docks. Port facility is land-based facilities for that regard.
You know, one of the challenge that you don't have to be a maritime or shipping expert to figure out is if you have seen the size of a cargo ship, and you factor in the time it takes to move move products from China to Argentina, and you ask yourself how much fuel it's consuming, that's just fossil fuel, and you have to translate all that. And you saw that there's this graph that Cheney brought up that showed how many ships I think it was 2024 how many ships that particular year used fossil fuel. and how many ships used the biofuel. There were three different types of fuel. And when you look at the type of ships, the type of ships that consumed, you know, that operated on fossil fuel in that year, that was a very massive number. And when you look at those ones that operated, you know, using biofuel, it was just like one tiny ship there.
Less than a million.
Yeah.
Less than a million.
Yeah. Now, when you compare that, this discussion, you know, takes me back to the discussion that we had last year, and that was about the use of organic fertilizer in agriculture.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like getting a lot of farmers, including commercial farmers for the most part, to transition from using inorganic fertilizer to organic fertilizer. Look, again, you don't have to be an agriculture expert to know that organic fertilizer is good for the environment.
Mm.
If the Ministry of Agriculture, for example, when they are implementing their, you know, initiatives associated with the, with combating food, you know, food insecurity in the country, they will do the Ministry of Environment a lot of good by using organic fertilizer.
Mm.
But now you have to ask yourself, how much organic fertilizer do you need to sustain a commercial agricultural project? The short answer is you need a lot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is going to take an extended period of time for all that to naturally break down, because you don't want to break it down using some types of accelerant, which would be like your synthetic chemicals, for example.
Yeah.
You don't want to use that because, again, it's bad for the environment. Now, it's not that commercial farmers don't know that, organic fertilizer is better for the environment in comparison to the inorganic one. I'm pretty sure they do know.
Mm.
It's just the reliability and effectiveness and the time period that you'll have to work through. And now, rainfall patterns are very unpredictable thanks to the unpredictable change in weather patterns brought about by climate change.
Yep.
You throw that in, then as a farmer, now you only have a very small window to farm a specific crop. Now, if you farm that specific crop within that very small window using organic fertilizer, by the time that organic fertilizer decomposes, that small window is already gone.
Yeah.
Now you have to figure out other ways of sustaining that crop, and the market is like, aren't you supposed to supply us this time?
And plus, what the Greek guy said. Remember the Greek guy before what was the guy's name? Stepped up the Frenchman. What was the Frenchman's name? Oh my goodness. Where the Greek guy said, "Do you know that?" Was it biogas? What was the thing that he referred to? The fuel?
Biofuel, biogas?
Was it biogas? But it was one of the particular sort of like, literally the things that you grow, particular variants of the alternative fuels, is almost, and he said it's almost non-existent, and that the particular, you know, for the platform of the future fuels has to consider that that mentioning something that they've got on a list, which is what Seni's list referenced,
mm-hmm.
mentioning something on a list has to take in accordance or has to take in recognition that just mentioning it there means it did exist at one time.
But
we don't know if it still is, because he was obviously speaking from a Greek perspective.
Yeah.
And it was surprising also to hear from from the panel that very few of the people that attended, besides the panel that was sitting there, the whole table, the high table of people, besides them, they were obviously
at the podium.
Was it a podium, Helmut, or was it a massive table?
It's a very giant table.
Yeah, so besides those guys sitting there who were all had some aspect of expertise and
in the energy industry,
and specifically in maritime transport and the source of energy for the maritime transport. That the lady said, it's surprising to hear that most of the delegates here don't have shipping experience or maritime experience. I was like, what?
The Roberta lady pointed that out in the beginning when she was explaining that, for where she explains like the 3%, that's the 3% carbon emission that's contributed. She didn't specify either that was annually, but I'm assuming it was 3% annually.
Yeah.
Now that's by the shipping industry in carbon emission. Yeah. So, Then when she moves to the, now when she moved to the, you know, to the next part of the graph, where she's showing the different types of you know, of ship category, and they are classified by the type of fuel they used in 2024.
Yeah,
whether they used biofuel or they used fossil fuel.
And what was the other one? The biofuel, fossil fuel, and LNG.
Exactly.
Yeah, because LNG was the one of 15 million tons per year.
Yeah.
The conventional fuel was a 200, more than 210 million tons per year, and the...
Just look at the numbers, 15 million,
210... 10, more than 210.
That's one heck of a transition that you'll have to, well, to carry out.
Yeah. You were still saying, Emma.
When I look at it, I think that's one very good discussion to have, starting from small type of, more like consumer-level machineries.
Yeah.
If the technology is perfected on things like cars, for example, it would be much easier to have that, to have that discussion on not just any ship, not a yacht, not a fishing boat, a cargo ship.
Mm.
A cargo ship. Now, biofuel is any type of fuel that is derived from biomass. You are talking about, basically decomposing, organic material.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they also highlighted it should also be specified what kind of biomass is used specifically for the biofuel production. Uh-huh. Are you using something left over from an industrial process?
Yeah.
Which is can still produce CO2 emissions, apparently.
Oh, yeah, it can.
Yeah. And then there's another function also, completely different in terms of where do you get it, what kind of land was designated. Was it land owned by a commercial farmer who took it away from food production and decided, you know what, I want to produce for making fuels.
I get it because, the International Maritime Organization falls under ECOSOC, right? And ECOSOC is a UN organization. Now, they are bound by obviously their parent organization, the UN, to follow through with the, with SDGs, SDG 13 is about taking urgent action to combat climate change and its impact.
Mm.
And when you look at the numbers of first of all, the most effective way of moving cargo and also very cheap in comparison to other modes of transport, especially when we're moving large amounts of cargo, nothing beats shipping. You can talk about you can fly it, but you can only fly so much of it.
Yep.
Like you cannot fly the cargo that's on the ship. What's this? Is it Evergreen? Or what's that? One of the giant ship, the one that got stuck in the is it the Suez Canal?
Mm.
Yeah, that was during COVID-19. Like, just look at how many shipping containers are on that thing, and imagine flying them.
Yeah. And you get short.
You'll take multiple trips.
Yeah.
And it's going to cost a heck a lot compared to using a ship. So it makes a lot of business sense to just use a ship. Except ships
and are. And not to fly.
First of all, if you have. No, it's very easy to rescue a shipping vessel than a flying cargo plane.
Yeah,
because when it got stuck during the COVID-19 times, when it got stuck during a COVID-19 Suez Canal.
Yeah, because you couldn't reverse.
what were those guys thinking?
I think he was trying. I think they had a bet there. Look! I can do a 360 in.
Someone was trying
in
to
the drift, Suez Canal.
Someone was trying to drift a cargo ship,
and then it got stuck sideways.
Now it created this unnecessary gem. People were waiting for their products.
I think they were bored. They were like, hey, man, let's make some entertainment for someone here.
Well, they really did piss off a lot of people.
Yeah.
But when you look into when you look at the shipping industry, from a business sense standpoint, fossil fuel is not going anywhere anytime soon. Because, if the shipping industry, for example, decided, we're just going to stop all our operations to save the environment. That will crash the global economy.
You are right in that scenario. Why do I say this? Remember the 210, more than 210 million tons of conventional fuel that they were using, which is fossil fuels.
Yeah, the one that were used by most cargo ships, in 2004. Yeah.
Remember the next graphic after that you showed about the
LNG and the biogas.
No, the average age of the ships. The average age of the ships, which was that there was a large portion of ships between 7 and 15 years in terms of how old they were and for how long they've been in use on the high seas. And then the strategy that she's explained, if the newer designs, newer ships coming in on ship designing, which is now between the 0 to 5 year and the 0 to 7 year period, those ships can still be retrofitted. Meaning retrofitting, dear listeners, which I did not know that they could retrofit even a ship. But it means either bringing in an additional engine that can run on a different fuel source, which is considered to be a clean fuel.
Yeah. So removing, taking out the traditional fossil fuel engine and replacing it with a biomass
one. Yeah. Or making that conventional engine hybrid, meaning
like just modifying it.
Yeah, just attaching a clean fuel using component part of it, and then making it a hybrid, power source, or it running on a hybrid power source situation, which was obviously a weird thing to hear as well, because I thought, a ship is just a ship, that you put one engine in there and then there you go. But then I kept remembering, that's probably why the Rotterdam guys were championing green hydrogen shipping or hydrogen-based shipping, meaning they've already got barges. So a barge is a very small version of a, what's the thing's name, of a cargo ship. And this is literally a cargo ship, but it's more a cargo boat-ish thing that you use up and down rivers. And barges would work perfectly in places like the Great Lakes area of Africa. There at Victoria Lake or Lake Tanganyika or what's the other lake's name? Or the Congo River that runs all the way here to the West African coast.
Yeah.
Or along the Nile River. But that's obviously if relations were so good between those connecting neighbors. I'm talking about Sudan, Ethiopia, and Egypt.
Yeah.
They supposedly talk to each other, but they're in secret very angry at each other, specifically at Ethiopia for the Blue Nile Dam. And I think Egypt will obviously go Egypt will obviously go and, still anger people even further with its expansion of it. Egypt wants to develop green schemes in the desert, but they want to channel water from the Nile. So they want to build an artificial canal system into the desert, because they realize most of their cities, which are based along the Nile River, are becoming, slightly overpopulated, and also that they would need further expansion into existing agricultural land, which is around the cities.
Yeah.
And then they realized we need to develop agricultural potential somewhere else. Now, Egypt is literally like Spain. It is 80% empty. And it is literally the other
places that are over, concentrated like heck.
Yeah, but and the other 20% is literally the concentrated livable areas, which is along the Nile, which there's a water source that they can live off. So now Egypt wants to literally channel away from the Nile, the part of the Nile that runs through them, to obviously into the Mediterranean Sea. They want to channel away water to develop green schemes there somewhere in the Sahara Desert. Okay. Now, if that does not sound like you angering your other neighbors while you were angry at the other neighbor for building a dam, I don't know what is. And in between, Sudan obviously has to first sort itself out before it can stay angry at the other two guys. So that's primarily the situation there, but that's got nothing to do with shipping. However, here's where things get interesting, Helmut. I then see a small little graph there of ammonia development as a fuel for shipping as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I see two spots there where Namibia is. I specifically went and looked there for two spots where Namibia is. And I was like, oh, ho. Now, this was one of the particular talking points that obviously came through, because I also went through the website specifically of the International Maritime Organization and the extra part on on the presentation that was done by the IMO guy that came after Seni, that Frenchman, what's his name? Something Beaujean.
Of course he's French.
I just want to get his name, man, just so that I don't sit here breaking people's names here live on air. So when Beaujean did his presentation specifically, the perspective that he was obviously going to give was what is the situation that the IMO is trying to champion with the future of fuels discussion. And the future of fuels discussion is obviously based upon what are we trying to see and what is in the pipeline. And like I have to stress, guys, it was literally not a platform where decisions were to be made. It was just about okay, everyone, let's
talk about this.
Let's participate.
That's the part where I was actually I was expecting someone from the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Yeah.
Now, because I just recently actually found out that because for a very long time I've been thinking that only submarines.
Yeah.
Use nuclear fuel. And this is, use nuclear fuel. And they take about 3-4 years to refuel.
Mm.
Yeah. Because of the whole radiation and, you have a lot of containment measures in place when you're dealing with something as dangerous as enriched or not enriched,
Diving nuclear bomb.
Yeah, exactly. A diving nuclear bomb. And then I also, just came to find out that some icebreakers use nuclear fuel too, and they really have to worry about carbon emission,
or switching on the engine, Yeah,
they don't. No,
I made that joke.
Well, look,
but it is literally so they don't have to worry about switching on the engine.
Actually, like switching off. So, sometimes the nuclear. Here's also one fun fact.
Yeah.
That what they have to do, especially on most icebreakers, is that they have to, they must have a lot of lights. Most of them have a lot of lights to consume the excess energy being produced on the ship.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they will have more energy than they need. That's how much energy they have.
Yeah.
They have so much of it, they need extra lights to waste some of it. So they don't have a lot of it in access.
Running literally in the copper wise.
Because, well, that can mean kaboom anytime. And that's a bad idea. So, look, the International Energy Agency was there. The International Atomic Energy Agency was there. But when you're talking about moving large objects, I don't know, I just don't understand why everyone is ignoring nuclear fuel. Because, one, it's reliable. Two, it takes you longer before you are going to have to ever think about refueling again. Now, the only problem that always worries me every time that I talk about nuclear fuel is that how to dispose of it, the proper disposing measures. A lot of companies don't follow the proper disposing measures. That's why you have unrehabilitated open pit mines left scattered across, especially for the most part of Africa. We even have them here. Well, what was one of the biggest problems with the Daures lithium, quote unquote illegal lithium mining? Someone went there, just dug a bunch of pits and then left them unrehabilitated, and that's the problem. You can do that with the extractive industry. You can do that maybe with crude oil.
Mm.
You can't afford to do that with nuclear fuel.
No.
No.
No, you definitely
can't. You can't be that careless.
No, you definitely cannot. Yeah. And also
I think that's one of the reasons why they're avoiding this subject, despite the effectiveness of nuclear fuel and the reliability that comes with it. Like I pointed out, icebreakers literally have to install lights. They
extra
need
lights.
Lights, extra lights. They don't need it. They just need it to burn excess energy.
Mm.
And you want to run a cargo ship? Decomposition.
They probably would. They probably would. Look.
Yeah, they would. I mean, they're already running some of them, even though it's just a very tiny fraction of those that are using fossil fuel. Yeah.
Do you know what's the worst part, Helmut? Every time I see nuclear energy or nuclear fuel production for transport and various other particular scenarios, every time just looking as the best example. That and hydrogen. Mm-hmm. Hydrogen and ammonia production.
Yeah.
Because hydrogen and ammonia production are literally the same thing.
So the same way that fossil fuel and natural gas
are together the same thing, yeah. However, they try to, you know, sound clever and differentiate themselves. Yeah, I'm natural gas, and the other one is to say yes, I'm petroleum. But people forget literally that it's these two guys are literally come from the same resource.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at obviously the discussion on hydrogen in itself, there's another thing that I saw. I did not know that there is also a hydrogen council that exists, an international hydrogen council. And I'm also now they're busy perusing through their resources in terms of what these, and they also submitted something against CBAM regarding Rule 27 or Section 27 of the CBAM, you know, founding document regarding you know, encouraging commercial activity and stuff like that. But every time when I look, just look at okay, so which fuels are the fuels that you can have there for like eternity,
yeah,
for the rest of humanity's existence,
yeah,
which technically can be the fuels that can help us shift away from CO2 production or greenhouse gas production,
yeah.
Even though if you go look up what's the total collection of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, in the Earth's atmosphere, which will be less than 0.0, less than or close to 0.3%. Carbon dioxide is literally
0.0 something,
yeah. Or it's the smallest percentage. It's in such a minority.
Yeah.
It's literally but it's literally what the climate scientists say is because we are rapidly fueling on certain parts of the world. It might not be in Namibia, it might not be in South Africa, but it would be in places like a Thailand, a Indonesia, a China, a India, where you've got a city that has 10 million people in it and 6 million of them own cars. Now imagine at 5 a.m. in the morning, 6 million people switching on their cars at the exact same time, and all of them
that
are now...
The city is engulfed.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's just been one of Beijing's biggest problems. Also one of the issues that India faced. All of India's cities faced that situation of smog and air pollution. It's actually weird that I never heard of the Japanese, specifically Tokyo, of suffering from that, even though Tokyo is considered one of the largest cities by population. Tokyo is something that more than 5 million people. Mm-hmm. Mexico City, I've also heard of almost nothing about Mexico City's air quality situation.
Okay, now that we are on the population things, part of things, last time I checked, Joburg has about the same population, about 4 or 5 million. I think that population is even higher now.
Yeah, Johannesburg would be, if you include Soweto into Johannesburg's situation, they would probably be very close to the 10 million mark. But it's obviously also the surface area that it covers.
So you're telling me we can just fit in Joburg?
Namibia. Uh-huh. But Namibia is in the top 10, I think it's number 5 or number 2, of being the largest city on one of the largest cities on Africa. Of surface area. It's because of our poor planning, of Windhoek's poor planning.
Windhoek, hey, it's not poor planning.
It is poor planning.
We went to South Korea to learn how to plan cities, and then we came.
No, you remember South Korea was not planned to plan cities. South Korea was to try.
Those guys just went for a lecture.
And it was a lecture, basically.
It was a lecture. You know what? You came here to learn how we made it. Now sit down and listen.
Yeah. Here's the lecture. Don't worry. The South Korean guys will explain everything.
Abir Ranjota is going to be looking for us.
Hey, he was the guy flying there, not us.
I know, right?
He was the one flying there. But yeah, so every time when you look at what could be the ultimate answer to any problem, any situation regarding reliable fuel sources and probably, you know, trying to get into the next generation of fuel, because we have to also be honest, Helmut, and this is what everyone is telling countries like Namibia who are trying to get into the oil and gas situation. Oil and gas is not a forever situation.
Yeah. The Norwegians told us that from the beginning.
Yeah. And I understand also specifically why, probably, why we have to look at it that regard is because if you look at nuclear fuel production and hydrogen and ammonia production, for transport, specifically heavy transport, and the potential also then to try and have these particular fuels becoming everyday uses and applications like ammonia and hydrogen. I haven't heard of an ammonia engine yet. I know that the hydrogen engines exist for cars. Is that the whole discussion is move past fossil fuels.
Fossil fuel, yeah.
Now, we obviously know Donald Trump is saying drill, baby, drill. He doesn't care about anything about the new fuels. We obviously know that Norway is still holding on to its natural gas. The same too also for Canada.
We're still exploring for ours, and we're looking forward to drilling, baby drilling.
Yeah, but it's looking weird, primarily because we have to be honest with things, guys. We really have to be honest. I mean, that there are already jobs from the baseline survey of for oil and gas.
Yeah.
There's already jobs, but the jobs are not in the extraction side of things. And I don't know why it's only the oil and gas guys that come and talk about upstream, downstream situations. I mean, if you go look at the rest of the mining sector, they don't use the weird terminology of upstream, downstream situations. No, there is no river here. It's literally a channel. Oh, like I understood.
So it's unnecessarily technical.
It's unnecessary. They're bringing unnecessary because it's the same thing that I can see that I learned in my distribution channel management subject. Distribution channel management is literally about, it's a supply chain. You either have a producer at the start and you either have an end consumer. In between, you've got a whole bunch of people. And then you've got people next to it, facilitators like the banking institutions. The banks give you the loans. They make the money move. You just need to make the product move. But anyway, besides talking about product, I don't want to sound weird, primarily because of what's happening in Mexico. They found El Mencho.
El what now?
You remember El Chapo?
Oh, no. Oh,
this other man. Cartel guy's name was El Mencho. I don't know what El Mencho means. I don't know what it translates to. But I was just waking up the whole of this morning.
I think the L is a prefix for something.
No, it says the something.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a little weird because I forgot to switch off the TV this morning. I fell asleep in front of the TV last night. And then the whole time on the news, I think it was BBC International, it just was like, yeah, Mexico is in chaos. Mexico in chaos. Because when he got assassinated, or you know, when he was killed by the supposedly the Mexican army, because it wasn't the Mexican police.
The El Mencho guys.
Yeah, the El Mencho guy. No, his name is El Mencho, the guy.
The late.
Yeah, the late. Uh-huh. And then the cartel went whole revenge, into a whole revenge spiral situation, and decided now to try and storm all airports, hotels. Yeah. Where they would find American tourists, because the American embassy in Mexico said that they assisted the Mexican army with intelligence about where this guy was. Makes you think about an American embassy in your country.
I think if there's one thing that a lot of countries know about but don't like to admit to each other, is that embassies is how they spy on each other.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
They don't like to talk about it because geopolitics is, in terms of international relations, is a world where you really have to watch your tongue, because you can easily kickstart an international incident. Like we witnessed, the Hyundai electric car battery plant?
Yeah.
Yeah. One phone call.
It was supposed to be also literally to become some sort of a electric vehicle production unit.
Yeah, yeah.
For America's Just Energy, or let's just call it like their environmental car initiative. Because Donald Trump doesn't like words like that. He doesn't like electric car, the idea of an electric car. But, you know, he appointed the guy for Doge, who has got a whole electric car brand situation. But anyway, and that plant had most plans to literally become an e-vehicle plant itself. Yeah. Because it would have then moved from not just battery production, but also,
the car manufacturing part of the plant seemed to have been up and running at the time. The battery plant is the one that was
the new addition to the plant.
Yeah, that was the new addition to the plant, and it had a lot of South Korean workers whose role were, our Divundu example, where you take, for example, a financial institution based in Windhoek, they want to expand a branch, you know, build a branch, like in terms of the physical infrastructure that they need in Dvuna.
Yeah.
They're not just going to show up in Dvuna and start saying, we think you are qualified to do this. They have, you know, they have their own supply chain or supply way of doing things. They know who to call when they need electrical wiring, where they need bricks made, when they need sand, when they need, they know who to call. So, these are qualified Hyundai engineers and basically experts in the line of work of electric car manufacturing, especially in the line of batteries, who went there to build that plant and then train Americans to take over the jobs. Then they would go back to South Korea.
But they were going to be there for like 2 or 3 years.
So now this whole, so they were there for two main reasons: to build their, you know, to complete the plant and train. The workers to take over. So, you know, employment creation and process.
Yeah. And capacity
one
development.
Phone call.
And capacity development, as we Africans must like to call it, you know, we could literally see it.
It's
the same thing that we must try to understand here as an African perspective. Yeah. Why can't we get there? But yeah, you're right. Yeah. One phone call literally just set that ship back to South Korea.
Yep. Yeah. Just one phone call to a wrong officer who also failed to do his own due diligence acting on anonymous tip. Ended up, you know, that whole incident ended up with, you know, with the South Korean government and the American government having a conversation. Like, diplomatic incidents just blown off, thanks to, well, social media.
And I still don't understand in that regard, Helmut. Why did the South Korean president have to fly to Trump if Trump's people were the one that caused the issue? But it also shows how big, how strong is the South Korean business lobby in South Korea.
So they just told him, Oga, go fix it.
Because that's the only thing I could think of. Because the South Korean Hyundai refused most to talk to any media in the US. And then all you see is just the South Korean president literally saying, yeah, I'm coming there, guys. I've got a planned flight, an emergency flight there to Washington. I'm coming. But yeah, before we continue, guys.
Yeah, no, I think the there are two companies that contributes I think massively economic wise, because remember shortly after COVID-19 there's one guy who was a Samsung heir to the Samsung throne. Yeah, he was given a presidential pardon.
Yeah, but I know that guy.
His dad was also given a presidential pardon. Because, well, too big to fail. 2008 financial crisis type of excuse. But before we continue, Life Read.
Da Vinci University, for the 2026 applications that are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences. For the following courses: Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and the Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever.
One more. Get your kicks from ShopRite Liquor Shops, a Smirnoff 1818 original vodka for only $159.99. Harrier's Whiskey and Gordon's Dry Gin for only $179.99 each. KWV 3-year-old Brandy for only $199.99. Richelieu Brandy for $189.99. And J&B Scotch Whiskey for just $239.99. Please don't drink and drive. ShopRite Liquor Shops care. So, in the world of shipping, this is where, if you ask me, where our practical reality comes into conflict with the theory that we come up with. I know SDG 16 is begging us to transition as fast as possible to save the planet. But when you look at it, it's the practical part of it is massive. the practical part of it is massive. It's not that the big shipping companies, the big shipping companies don't know that the transition in the fuel that they use in most of their, in most if not all their cargo ships will help save the environment.
Yeah,
it's just how costly is that going to be? It's going to be insanely, on the expensive part of things, it's kind of difficult to explain.
Yeah.
But, at least for me. Now, but on the efficiency part of things, that is, you don't have to be an expert to see that it's going to require a lot of you decomposing something. You have to understand that you are allowing something to decompose naturally for you to collect this. If you were to plant and animal waste, not just any waste.
Yeah.
If you could turn plastic waste into that, then you could. I mean, you could just easily deal with garbage patches that we're dealing with as part of maritime pollution. But except you can't use plastic, you can only use animal or plant waste. Now, just how much of animal and plant waste are you going to have to run the global shipping industry, and for how long?
And that's where the land use discussion from.
So now you have to plant it.
Yeah, you have to plant it. You need to be clear on where you're getting it from, because it could also come from another industrial process, like Frankel explained, or if it's the land use. The land use change discussion, you need to say, does it literally put food production under strain?
Yeah.
Or does it literally take away food production potential? Meaning, does it change the reason why the agricultural field is now growing a specific kind of a biofuel source for shipping, for transport, versus producing a biofuel source or just food for bellies, for belly politics,
Okay, so now if you want to venture in the direction of which we have taken already as a country.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Ministry of Mines, I think, I remember they started, the earliest I remember running into one piece of literature of the Ministry of Mines here at home, here in Namibia, looking into the bioenergy direction of things. The oldest piece of literature I ran into dates back to 2012.
Mm.
Yeah. So that means, we are also looking in that direction. We're also looking in the direction in terms of investment, energy transition, all that. So if you have to plant it,
yeah,
and then harvest it, and then decompose it for you to get the fuel that you need, planting also means you are irrigating.
Yeah,
that spills into your water discussion.
Of
Which now becomes, a competition, especially on a global level. You need, you need water for that. You need water for agriculture, like for food security discussion, not agriculture, for biomass. Because as you can imagine, the planting of whatever plants that you are planting to use as a biomass at the biofuel at the end of the day, it will also require planting and basically taking care for it to reach the level of maturity that you will harvest it.
Yeah.
So you'll need water for that. You'll need water for your crops that you are going to use for consumption. That's for your food, and you are going to need what's one of the biggest the rising biggest and also concerning water consumer, data centers.
But that's now the new challenge, was now how it's taking water away from urban needs or societal needs, and these data centers are now
consumption directly, as in drinking to crops.
Yeah, because in America now they are establishing, or you will see the rise now of advocacy groups against the construction of a data center in a town, in a small town.
Yeah.
So what these IT companies,
it's taking all the water, not just all the water, but all the power, all the energy. Yeah.
But what it's also doing is it goes and negotiates with the council to say, listen, give us a rate for cheap water and electricity, And the rest of the costs of the water and electricity supply is dumped on the households that live in the town.
Oh, man.
So it's also becoming a major headache, even though the IEA said, data centers will have to balance things. But the people that actually install the data centers in the American context are problematic because these data centers are happening in small towns.
Yeah.
And the small towns don't have the budget to pay for the consumption cost that this thing is creating. And the town council is now coming and saying, okay, listen, Dwight, so I feel you must pay, $100 extra per liter of water and $200 extra per kilowatt hour. Per kilowatt hour that you are going to use, which sounds absurd because I can't go negotiate for a better price, but the data center guy could negotiate for a better price.
Yeah, they have bargaining power.
Yeah. So it becomes problematic, and data centers don't actually generate much employment opportunities as well, because many of the people will anyway be shipped in from wherever the company comes from, and then they'll be operating the data center there. So, yeah, you are right, Helmut, in that regard. So, in the shipping avenue of things, I am interested to see, when I went and looked at, where does this future fuel situation come from? And the other link that I shared with you, the one about the IMO's 2023 strategy, but its particular strategy, for greenhouse gas emissions and achieving, its net zero goals, which was the thing that the Americans and the Saudis and two or three other countries were complaining about, was that it clearly says that they've got a goal to achieve some sort of a phasing out of fossil fuels in the shipping sector, specifically in all maritime transportation facilities. So it doesn't say you and your speedboat at Von Bach Dam, no. It doesn't say you and your rubber ducky at Danfeljoen, no. It doesn't say you and your, two-oar situation, two-cylinder situation, they're paddling on Danfeljoen, no. It literally speaks to major transportation devices, or let's call them vehicles, used for international shipping, that they probably have to try and do their part of having a clean initiative. Now, 3% contribution to overall greenhouse gas emissions is tiny. It is tiny because they know not every Namibian, not every European, not every American can go and just, buy a boat and then try and sail there on the waters. No. However, they're trying to do their part, and I'm not promoting for them, but just highlighting from reading the particular strategy document, they're trying to do their part so as to not be asked past 20, 30 years, so why are you guys still using fossil fuels?
So it's obviously a transition, an energy transition discussion.
Yeah. So, the particular departure point is a highly interesting one, but there's a direction that also highlighted why this future of fuels was taking place. So, the other link that I sent you, Helmut, about the future of fuels website by the IMO, is actually also something in conjunction developed by guess who? That showed up today there, where, with the NAMPOT guys, with the government of South Korea. So, it seems, I'm just throwing something out there. I'll still go and search for it and still verify and fact check myself probably in between. It seems that this is an idea coming through from South Korea, specifically about the future of international shipping. Now, the major shipping countries in the world, Greece, China has now come onto this. South Korea is also a major player. I would put Germany, Norway, Denmark, and Sweden together because of Maersk, where Maersk operates.
Yeah.
The Brits, they obviously fell off long ago, way long ago. The Americans, probably.
Brexit meant a lot of exits.
That too. And obviously in the Southern Hemisphere, things are looking bleak, or in the Global South, things are looking bleak.
Yeah.
Because the international shipping corridors are managed, maintained, administered by the international shipping companies. Because you're looking at not just at the cargo ship, you're also looking at the containers. Because there was a very interesting thing that highlighted during the COVID pandemic, or after the COVID pandemic, where Yanis Varoufakis said, where people are asking, yeah, why is the trade so bad between China and the U.S.? When Joe Biden became president, even after Donald Trump left, I thought, because the Americans apparently said, I thought it, you know, the trade would normalize. And then Yanis explained, Hamid, well, you know, when the shutdown, the COVID shutdowns happened, all the cargo ships were stuck in China, between China and the US, you know, the Pacific trading.
Yeah.
All the cargo ships were stuck in China. And all the containers were stuck in the U.S., on the west coast of the U.S. So I'm talking about San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco. What's the other city here?
The ships and the containers were literally on opposite ends
of literally the Pacific Ocean. So, which obviously, if you can see a big picture like that becoming problematic,
yeah,
you can imagine a small picture, for example, like, potentially looking, let's say, between two scenarios of the Mediterranean, between Europe and North Africa, or Europe and, let's say, the Middle East, literally here where Lebanon and the other guys are. Because literally that's how their container ships would work. Or even before the Ukraine conflict picked up,
yeah,
that the ships are on the containers, the ships and the containers are stuck on the Russian port and at the last Ukrainian port that was there, Sevastopol.
Yeah.
That those guys are stuck there because it's now COVID lockdowns and they can't go to Egypt because Egypt will tell you, you guys can't climb off the boat.
Uh-huh.
We don't want your infections. So it would make things obviously, problematic.
Yeah.
Or the ship would then sail through the Suez Canal. No one wants to touch anyone's money. Because they would say, okay, you guys stay there. We've got a speed point, ne? Just use your card. And wipe your card off before and after use.
Yeah.
And then they would go down the East Coast and then the ship would be told, but you guys can't get off the ship. We've got lockdowns. We don't know with what variant of COVID you're showing up here with. So it makes things problematic. But that puts it in a different perspective.
Yeah.
That impacts trade. It doesn't impact what fuel you're using, what engine your ship is using.
It's strictly trade.
Yeah, it literally impacts trade. Now, when I went and looked at the international rules, but before we did that, we've got the live reads to do, guys, and we're taking live read 1 before live read 2.
Get your kicks from ShopRite Liquor Shops, Smirnoff 1818 Original Vodka for only $159 and 99 cents. Harry's Whiskey and Gordon's Dry Gin for only $179 and 99 cents each. KWV 3-year old brandy for only $199 and 99 cents. Richly brandy for only $189 and 99 cents. And J&B Scotch whiskey for just $239 and 99 cents. Please don't drink and drive. ShopRite Liquor Shops care.
Vivici University for the 2026 applications that are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following courses: Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and the Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406, Vivica University, where everyone is an achiever. Yeah. So we've literally got like a
few seconds to business and economic segment.
Ah, is it a few seconds, Hamid?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Well, yeah. 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 The seconds are now gone.
On the dot. Yeah.
Yeah. So, It seems like the future fuels situation is not done. I also checked up on, you know, any future discussions that they might have. That's not the IMO.
Yeah.
And it seems like they are looking at, like, in a comprehensive perspective. Obviously, I'm trying to stay abreast regarding the international treaty that they want to sign regarding their pledge to nullifying or doing away with fossil fuels in the shipping industry. However, that is, there's a lot of noise happening there.
You know how I see that going?
Yeah.
The very same way that the, and you know, the plastic waste discussion took place in South Korea.
Yeah, they've also got one there. Uh-huh. But the IMO guys, they apparently also have a plastic waste or plastic pollution perspective. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, in the plastic pollution discussion last year, the reason why it was postponed to further notice without any specific date in mind was that I also have to check up on those guys. I don't know if they are going to, if they set a late last year, which I highly doubt, or they have, you know, like a sitting date to conclude their discussion, because that was not the first time it had been postponed.
Mm.
The reason why it was postponed last year is because they could not reach a unanimous consensus.
Mm.
A lot of environmental activists were calling for the shift from plastic, especially carriage bags, to other alternative modes of of materials of making carriage bags. But a lot of fossil fuel, fossil fuel representatives were saying, not complete ban. They were going for more like a limit, not complete ban.
Well, the word limit also sounds weird, because how do you control? Who are you going to police, Hamoud, if you now get on a boat, ne, with your plastic bag in hand? Who's going to police you? Which police officer will go and say, let's say now Namibia, because Namibia most loves this new trend of, let's wait for the UN to develop something, a convention on this new perspective. And then they keep quiet for like 2 years. And then, poof, we are invited here to a public stakeholder engagement about, let's for example, use plastic pollution on a plastic bag pollution bill.
Then you're like, what?
And you're like, but we were asking for 2 years. Where is this discussion? Why didn't you guys say that you were attending for 2 years a UN convention on this thing? Yeah. And in between, Namibia signs a UN convention, because that's what happened with the cybercrime.
Yeah.
In between, Namibia agrees and signs to the UN Convention on Cybercrime. And then for 2 years, we are wondering, now, why didn't anyone say anything? Hamoud, in the 2 years, okay, it was now literally 2 years. In the 2 years that you and I have been doing Home Run, we didn't hear anything, nor see any discussion of Namibia going off gallivanting to a UN Convention on Cybercrime. Something that the Russians introduced in 2017, they made a suggestion, let's have a convention on cybercrime. And then in between, we say, yes, we are signing this convention. Because it was apparently signed in 2024.
Jeez. Cybercrime.
Cybercrime.
Oh, yeah. And in that department, Interpol is sweeping the African continent. Turns out, boy. Digital access is enabling to rob boys from Bangkok to rob you. Now, that says something. Digital access is coming with its pros and cons. Like they say, when you pray for rain, get ready for mud. So, because, well, you can separate the two. Mm. So, I totally understand. And like you said, the energy transition is something that every industry wants to go into. Especially the automotive industry is, I think it's making a lot of headways. And the rail industry is also taking the direction of energy transition from fossil fuel.
Mm.
Minus us, obviously. Energy transition into renewable forms of energy.
Yeah.
So it's understandable that the shipping industry is also having this discussion. So they also have to do their part into, because again, it's called a transition for a reason. It's not something that you have to just snap your fingers and do.
Yeah.
You have to gradually implement it. To implement the new things that you are bringing in and gradually phase out the new, the old things that you want to get rid of.
Mm.
So, well, otherwise, I mean, which is also totally understandable, because you can't just bring international shipping to a standstill because then you have a lot of economic chaos. A lot of countries, including your friends, will be very pissed at you.
Yep, they will always be angry.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we also have to try and understand here, Helmut, why, you know, in some scenarios, I'm also trying to wrap my head around this issue that we as Africans, we still don't have a plan for ourselves, and the plan for ourselves should also be how we deal with the other zones of the world. But everyone has a plan for us.
Yep.
Everyone they just know how that plan just looks for example, Namibia.
You know what's the most important part about plans that I think, you know, why Africa doesn't have a lot of plans? Plans requires funding.
And, Helmut?
Mm-hmm.
It most needs...
Namibia is a EU... the EU... Namibia is the EU's developmental partner. Yeah. So is the African Union.
Yeah, true.
Now, look, the part I don't understand about African Union is how we are comfortably sit every year in the UN headquarters and smile like we even contributed a dime to the building. Like, that's part of the problem.
Mm.
You can't come up with a plan if you... okay, look, I think I totally understand. We don't come up with plans because we know we're not going to fund it.
Or we're not going to give you the money.
We're not going to give you the money. It's not that we don't have the money. We have the money. Yeah. We have the money to go to Malaysia for a headache.
Yeah.
But not to fund our own projects.
We have money, or we get invited on someone else's ticket to go to South Korea to go watch a PowerPoint.
National Planning Commission is going to look for you after this.
Look, there's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do. But yeah, this is we've taken the time of some of taking appropriated some time from David. But
until
yeah,
tomorrow, same time, same place on a favorite radio station, Eagle FM. You all have a blessed evening, and please do stay tuned for Business and Economic segment with David.